this evening. We're reading from the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita entitled The Divisions of Faith, text number 8 and 9 and 10 also. Food dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. So such foods include ghee, not oil, grains, fruits, and sweets, pleasing to the heart. They give strength, health, happiness. Health is wealth, and obviously it's very difficult to be happy if you're in wretched health, weak health. So every devotee should endeavor to take care of his body. The body is like a tree, the human body. From the tree you get fruits and flowers, and from the tree of the human body you get the fruit, love of Godhead, atato brahma jigyasa. Not that in animal life or insect life you go on inquiring about Brahman. It's in human life that you get this opportunity. So to maintain the body for this purpose is dharmic. It is important, and someone who neglects the body, that is called phalgu vairagya, or false renunciation. Although the body is material, but without it, you cannot practice religious principles. Therefore, everything in relationship to the body must be carefully choreographed, or our life must be scripted in such a way, just like you write a movie script. So our life must be scripted in such a way that we can always think of God. And the mode of goodness is ideal for this purpose. It is very difficult in the mode of passion or ignorance to go beyond the animal platform, the sensual platform. Real strength comes not just from visiting a gym and lifting weights so that you end up looking like a gorilla, bodybuilding, or whatever, but real strength comes from training. For example, people, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I think he's already had triple bypass surgery, heart problems. And it's, as far as I know, an established statistic that people who excessively train the body for athletics, they die relatively early because they work or overwork the body, and their athletic life lasts up until 30, 35, 40. And then afterwards, from there, they go downhill most often. So those who, for example, practice yoga, or who practice some type of exercise that tones the body in a holistic way, in an overall way, they have strength. So one cannot consider health unless he also thinks about diet. because the body is just like a machine, and if you put diesel fuel into a benzene engine, if you don't put oil in the car, if you don't change the oil, or if you don't do whatever it takes to properly maintain the car, it'll break down. This is common sense. It's easy to understand. But unfortunately, people can't put one and one together and realize two. They can't understand the correlation between what they put into the body and how the body performs. So the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna here in the Bhagavad Gita, is telling Arjuna and all of us that foods which are in the mode of goodness, they help us to practice self-realization. And very often, devotees in general, brahmacharis in particular, but even ladies and grihasthas, ask, how can I control my genitals? How can I control my mind? Do you have any tricks? Well, there are some tricks that will help. But there are some major things also. Small things are there. Don't watch movies, especially nowadays. There's always sex and violence. If you expose your mind to that, it's going to have an effect. Wear Brahmin underwear, otherwise known as Kopan. But one of the most essential things is don't eat foods in the mode of passion that agitate your mind. Because if you're eating foods in the mode of ignorance and passion, even if you're not subjecting yourself to other stimuli, these things will act like drugs. Food is like a drug in your body, coursing through your veins, racing through your blood veins. And surely your body will be forced to act. Arjuna asked Krishna, what is it that forces us to act, even against our will? And Krishna says, kamesha, krodesha, it's lust, anger, greed. And this lust is instigated, or it is catalyzed by eating the wrong kinds of food. One interesting thing here is fatty food and pleasing to the heart. A lot of people say that eating ghee is bad for the heart because it's a fatty food, produces cholesterol. But it's just like the idea of cow dung. And we hear from the scripture that it is antiseptic, that it's pure, that stool of an animal or stool of anyone, if you touch it, you should ideally take bath. But on the other side, cow dung is considered pure. You can clean the kitchen with it. You wash the altar before you install the deities. You live in a house smeared with cow dung in the villages in India. Interesting, they have bamboo huts that are covered with cow dung, and insects don't come there, snakes, reptiles, and it even keeps away mosquitoes and other things, especially if they burn little cow dung patties at night. It is so nice. So if you study chemically, cow dung, you'll find that it has chemical properties which are antiseptic. So in the same way, if you study cholesterol and you understand the properties of ghee, there's two kinds of cholesterol, LDL and DHL. Not DHL, that's people who deliver packages. LDL cholesterol and what's the other one? No educated people here, huh? Come on. What's the other one? LDL and the other kind of cholesterol. So one of them is dangerous and the other is not. In fact, it actually cuts down the low density or high HDL cholesterol, high density cholesterol. So, of course, yukta hara viharasya, yukta chestasya karmasu, yukta svapna babodasya yoga bhavati dukaha. One should be regulated in everything he does, including eating. For example, many devotees in their 40s and 50s have ruined health because they ate too much as brahmacharis in the spirit of, you know, book distribution or ecstatic kirtan or whatever it was. I remember one of our methods of book distribution, and this was in 1970, was we had a temple with 35 brahmacharis and all passionate as anything. And we had to go out every day, all day long, distributing magazines. This was before we had books. So the temple president would make sure that breakfast meant a huge plate of sweet rice. You ate that sweet rice and you got so wired up, you got so passionate, and then he'd shove you out on the street. And but the final result is that many devotees have diabetes, and, or at least near diabetes, and many other problems. In fact, Prabhupada said at one time that food is death. In other words, one should eat sparingly. And we saw Srila Prabhupada, he practically ate very small amounts. I mean, he was served very nice prasadam and many preparations, and often people would love to cook for him, but he would just take one bite of this and one of that. If he really liked something and he was hungry from hard preaching, he might eat all of something. But that, you know, wasn't that he didn't like the other things also, but he was just careful with his diet. And I saw, living in India, other Indian gentlemen who also practiced, of Prabhupada's generation, who practiced self-restraint. So if you eat too much ghee, obviously, even though it's not bad for you, if you eat too much of it, it will be bad for you. And it's just like we understand the overindulgence of today's society, the hedonistic tendencies, and people really don't enjoy. They try to get more and more. They try to have more and more and more wine, more and more and more sex, more and more and more feasts of rajasic and tamasic foods, animal foods. More and more thinking that faster, faster, more, more, this is happiness, it's just around the corner. If I can just go a little faster, it'll be there, I know it. But they don't get it. But if they stop smoking cigarettes, they'll find that their food tastes much better, that they can breathe. Breathing air is actually wonderful. People who smoke cigarettes have never breathed air. I don't know. And regulating your sex life for what it's worth, it becomes a more wholesome experience. And you produce something from it. Not just dribble your fluids all over the place. But you produce good children. And you feel satisfied. And the desire, the itching sensation, reduces. And you feel peace of mind. So in the same way in our eating, if we learn self-restraint, our food will taste better. Our feasts will taste better. Whatever, we'll be happier. And in Krishna consciousness, you know, I remember, because we weren't so, we didn't have a Vaishnava calendar and we didn't know a lot of the holidays that we now know. So it was like a Sunday feast to Sunday feast existence. On Sunday feast you felt ecstatic because you had gulab jamuns and samosas and halva, strawberry halva, raspberry halva, blueberry halva, you know, three sub-G's with paneer. We had big feasts, you know, well cooked. And you felt ecstatic, and then during the week, if you felt like leaving, you know, you'd be encouraged, well, just stay until the Sunday feast, and okay, I'll stay. It was like Sunday feast to Sunday feast. And in fact, what devotees would do is from a Sunday feast, they'd keep a stash, a cache. You know, they keep a little box and hide it away somewhere with, you know, maybe 10 Simply Wonderfuls and a few samosas. Nobody else knew, and they'd once or twice a day or whatever pull it out. But now we have so many holidays, and the Mahaprasadam is there. And there's no need to get in anxiety about anything. Sukham indriyakam daitya deha yogena dehinam. Sarvatra labhyate daivat yatha dukham ayatnataha. Prahlad Maharaj is telling his demoniac, the sons of his demoniac associates, the father's demons, and the sons were sons of demons, whatever. He was telling them, my friends, happiness and distress are coming automatically. It's sarvatra labhyate daivat, everywhere in the world. There's sense enjoyment. You're going to get your quota, don't worry. You're going to get, you will get, you are getting, you can't stop getting. No matter what you do, you're going to get your quota of sense gratification. Better you use your life's energy, jivasya tatta jigyasa, for understanding the absolute truth. That's what your life's energy is meant for. Don't aspire for, as Rishabhdev explains, the vidbujam, the stool eaters get also. You're going to get your quota. Tasyaiva heto prayate tat kovido na labhyate yad brahmatam upariyata ta labhyate dukavaranyat ta sukham kalena sarvatra gabhira ramhasa. Kalena, in time, there'll be a balance of everything, and your endeavoring to get more won't give you more. So just be satisfied with simple things, quality happiness, and try to find that which will give you ananda. Try to go swimming, not at the coast, but in the ocean of ever-increasing bliss, anandam buddhivardhanam. It's an interesting concept, which we can hardly believe exists, but if you try, then you'll know. But just by speculating, you'll never know. An ever-increasing ocean of happiness. It's not a question of happiness and distress. It's a question of happiness and more happiness, and more happiness, deeper and deeper. What are these ecstatic symptoms that we hear about? Where do they come from? Horripilation, crying, laughing, sometimes crying and then all of a sudden laughing, and then belching. All these amazing symptoms. Where are they coming from? Someone is going deeper and deeper into the ocean of bliss and they just can't control. They lose control. It's so pleasurable. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, misery, and disease. Well, there are these different tastes, and a good meal consists of all the different rasas. They're called rasas. Bitter is one rasa. In fact, if you go in Mayapur, and if they serve a nice meal, it depends on where you eat. If you eat, if you know where to eat, in the right place, pay a little something and eat in the conch building, whatever. The first thing they'll serve you will be karela or neem bacon, neem eggplant, something bitter. It has the result of starting your taste buds moving. Bitter, it gets your juices flowing. So they'll start you off with bitter, then something salty, something sour. Hot, well, you know, chili is good for you. Not excessive chilies, but green chilies, not red chilies. A lot of vitamin C in there. There's a way to cut down the heat. You take out the center portion, the seeds, and just take the outer shell of the chili, make a chance. When Prabhupada made a chance, whoa, watch out, get out of the kitchen. I remember the chance, you know, put the chance in the pot and put the lid on the pot and there'd be an explosion and the lid would come flying off and then everybody within a, you know, 3 mile radius would be coughing. Pungent, that's rare. Dry, burning, rare. Sweet, of course, was mentioned earlier. Salty, not too salty. Only diseased people can't take salt. But the salt of life. Of course, some people prescribe eating without salt. And it's good if you can get quality salt, not this super refined stuff that we get now that may be damaging to your health, but rock salt or whatever it is, unrefined salt, sour. I could eat sour till the cows come home. I mean, I what to do? I guess I'm so sour that I like sour. Food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten, food that is tasteless and decomposed and putrid, and food consisting of remnants and untouchable things, is dear to those in the mode of darkness. Purport. The purpose of food is to increase the duration of life, purify the mind, and aid bodily strength. This is its only purpose. So we should live to eat. No. We should eat to live. Many of us have in the past lived to eat, as I explained. But the real purpose of anything, the purpose... See, nothing is a substitute for the pure rasa of Krishna prema, Krishna love. Love is all you need. So sex is a substitute. Eating is a substitute. They have their function. Even alcohol has a function. Mrityu Sanjeevani is Ayurvedic medicine. It's 80 proof alcohol, quite potent alcohol. In fact, I knew a man who, under the pretext of being sick and taking medicine, would just drink bottle after bottle of Mrityu Sanjeevani and get drunk. He was a cheater. And he did reap the fruit of his cheating. You don't escape. You can't win, ultimately. Our society is just too close. We're closely knit. We live together. It's better, I mean, if you've got a problem, open your heart up to somebody you trust or do something, but trying to cheat doesn't work because Paramatma is there, Super Soul is there, Prabhupada is there, they're guiding this movement, and you're just wasting your time. You should be pursuing your foolish desires so you can get back to your right position sooner. But the purpose of food is to give us the strength. And if you fast, of course, a little fasting cleans the body, but excessive fasting makes it very hard to think of Krishna or anything cogent. So food is important. So the right foods. In the past, great authorities selected those foods that best aid health and increased life duration, such as milk products, sugar, rice, wheat, fruits, and vegetables. Okay, we should... Again, it's not that... Whatever instructions we get in Krishna consciousness, we're expected to use our intelligence also. In other words, someone could come along here and say, okay, milk products, sugar, rice, and just go out to the store and buy what's ever available in the market. But no, we should try to get milk products that are pure, without this bovine, genetically modified milk. Can't trust it. It will ultimately better when the day comes that we have our own farms and our own cows. And by the way, in New Vrajadam, they are constructing a new barn to replace the one that burned down for the beautiful cows that they have there. And if any of you have ever tasted the milk at New Vrajadam, those cows produce amrit. It's not milk, it's nectar. And they've all been born at New Vrajadam. They're protected. They're not in any fear of being slaughtered. They get lots of grass and the most wonderful creatures. And it's a $250,000 expense, and they're looking for help. If any of you are inclined to raise funds or give funds for cows, it's a nice project. But we should get good milk and sugar. We should try to eat good quality sugar. Now, Prabhupada did say at one point when they served him honey, he said, you take honey, I want sugar. But in India, sugar is especially in the villages, it's unrefined sugar. It's not this polished and, you know, polished through bones of animals and highly toxic sugar, but it's a little bit healthier sugar. Rice, you know, the army runs on its stomach. Better you eat a little less, but eat well. In other words, there are different kinds of rice, but basmati rice, and that also unrefined basmati rice, is the most wholesome. Wheat, fruits, vegetables, someone should look into organic foods, because again, the more problems, chronic problems devotees get, the more you'll have to pay in the long run. Devotees get sick. So either you pay by giving good quality prasadam, and those who are not contributing can give donation for the food, and those who are dedicating their lives, they'll get good quality food, and they'll work hard. And there's the biggest cost today in any project is labor cost. And we're getting free labor. Incredible resource. So, some other foods, such as baked corn and molasses, while not very palatable in themselves, can be pleasant when mixed with milk or other foods. Corn is actually meant for feeding cows or pigs, or, you know, it's not a very high class food in India. But Prabhupada used to like corn halava. It was fried in ghee. So something that was like a sudra food, when it's mixed with ghee, or here it says milk or other foods, becomes palatable. Again, use your intelligence. They are then in the mode of goodness. All these foods are pure by nature. They're quite distinct from untouchable things like meat and liquor. Fatty foods, as mentioned in the 8th verse, have no connection with animal fat obtained by slaughter. Animal fat is obtained in the form of milk, which is the most wonderful of all foods. We do need animal fat, but we get it in the form of milk, rather than creating an economy which is destroying the world. Eating cows directly instead of taking their blood in the form of milk creates an industry where water is used in excess, grains are used to feed the animals. Meat eaters depend on food grains because the grains have to be fed to the animals, and something like 60-70% of all edible food products in the USA go towards feeding livestock. Very amazing statistics. And then the damage that it causes to the ecology, the pollutants that go back into the ecosystem, into the rivers, into the underground rivers, from slaughtering cows and raising cows and chickens and pigs and every other thing they can dig their teeth into. It's very destructive. And there's a population of natives in Africa, big, tall giants, I don't know, 7 foot tall, very big. And they keep cows. They have these Brahma cows, amazing. And they don't drink the milk that much, but they stick a little pipe in the cow's neck. And they don't kill the cow, but they take the blood. I think they should just take the milk, you know, but I don't know, they have a taste for blood. But they don't kill the cows. They're kind of intelligent in one sense. I think they're considered to be like the Brahmins more philosophical than other tribes. Animal fat is available in the form of milk, which is the most wonderful of all foods. Milk, butter, cheese, and similar products give animal fat in a form which rules out any need for killing of innocent creatures. It's only through brute mentality that this killing goes on. The civilized method of obtaining needed fat is by milk. Slaughter is the way of subhumans. Again, just because we have two legs, two arms, a head, belly, does not make us human beings. Now, we really got to think of that, about that, because we were brought up, trained to think that everyone is equal and everyone is the same, and it's not like that. Everyone is not the same. For example, Morarji Desai made a big show in India of burning his sacred thread to show that the people who lived in the forest and were more Sudra-like, and actually not even Sudra-like, they were more Malecha-like, low class, and Brahmins were all equal. So he made a show of burning his Brahmin thread. You see, this is my philosophy. But he married his daughter to a good Brahmin boy. He didn't marry her to someone living in the forest. So. The fact is that we're taught to see everyone as equal, but there are different grades, and some are subhuman. Unless one comes to the platform of Varnashram Dharma, he's not considered to be human. It's new to us. It's threatening. It has to be preached very carefully. It's not something that people are likely to accept very quickly. But if you accept it on the surface, if you accept it on face value, logically, if you understand it, you can't refute it. Protein is amply available through split peas, dal, whole wheat, etc. Slaughter is the way of subhumans. Foods in the mode of passion which are bitter, too salty, or too hot, or overly mixed with red pepper cause misery by reducing the mucus in the stomach, leading to disease. Foods in the mode of ignorance or darkness are essentially those that are not fresh. Any food cooked more than 3 hours before it is eaten, except prasadam, food offered to the Lord, is considered to be in the mode of darkness. Because they are decomposing, such foods give a bad odor which often attract people in this mode but repulses those in the mode of goodness. So here, in referring to prasadam, is referring to foods which don't decompose after 3 hours. Now, if there is something that does decompose and it's offered to the Lord and you make some chutney and it's rotting, you know, it's obviously gone alcoholic, and oh, it's prasadam, prabhu, it never goes bad, we can eat it, and then you get sick. Well, that's your stupidity. Krishna consciousness is very simple for the simple. Remnants of food may be eaten only when they are part of a meal that was first offered the Supreme Lord or first eaten by saintly persons, especially the spiritual master. Otherwise, the remnants of food are considered to be in the mode of darkness and they increase infection or disease. Such foodstuffs, although very palatable to persons in the mode of darkness, are neither liked nor even touched by those in the mode of goodness. The best food is the remnants of what is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Lord says that he accepts preparations of vegetables, flour, and milk when offered with devotion. Patram, pushpam, phalam, trayam, yome bhakta prachati. Of course, devotion and love are the chief things. which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts. But it is also mentioned that the prasadam should be prepared in a particular way. Any food prepared by the injunctions of the scripture and offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be taken even if prepared long, long ago, because such food is transcendental. Therefore, to make food antiseptic, eatable, and palatable for all persons, one should offer food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Krishna is above the modes of material nature. Tribir gunamayar bhavar ab sarvam idam jagat. He explains that there are three modes and they govern the whole universe, but he is above them. Most people cannot understand his transcendental position, and therefore they don't inquire about his instructions. Now, this explanation coming from the Vedas is given to us, or we are interested in this because we have an interest in spiritual life. We're looking, and this is very intelligent, very scientific knowledge. It's presented very nicely. I don't think that we could sit every day, morning and evening, with this group of people, and you're all wonderful devotees, and I'm really, really pleased to see all of you regularly here executing Krishna consciousness. But if one by one we were just getting up and making testimonials that I love the Lord and I tried to stop smoking cigarettes and I bathed in the blood of the Lord and I gave up cigarettes, you know, and how many stories can you tell? How many testimonials can you give? We're discussing philosophy. And it's endless, because even if we were discussing the philosophy and chanting the same verse over and over again, Bhaktisiddhanta said you can take one verse from the Bhagavatam and discuss it for 3 months or more. So even if we were doing that, still it would be enlivening. But we're actually seeing the truth from different angles, bringing into our discussion different examples, different ideas, different approaches. So it is definitely superior. And those who do have faith in Krishna, that he is Purushottama, what is that verse? Purushottama Mohitam Nabijanati. Foolish persons don't know. Nabijanati. They don't know because they're bewildered. Moha Mohitam. Sasarvavid Bhajati Mam Sarva Bhavena Bharata. Those who do know, they're able to act in the material world with confidence, and they're able to, stitam satve prasidati, they're able to proceed nicely. Their bodies are healthy, their minds are healthy, they don't have problems, they execute devotional service, they live according to their time, whatever their time span has been ordained. And then they die without any trepidation, without any difficulty, a glorious death, often very mystical. Many things happen to devotees that are inexplicable. We're just reading about one devotee in Scotland. Was I telling you about her? in Scotland. She's the wife of Bhakti Ballabhpuri Goswami. Incredible. She had a brain tumor. So many things happened. I'll tell you more things. But one thing I remember just now was Bhakti Ballabhpuri Goswami has so many Shilas, 10,000 or more. He wants to get 20,000. It becomes a tirtha, it's a special. He doesn't worship 10,000 every day. He has them in a bucket, and on behalf of the 10,000, he worships a few. But they're all worshipped through those few. But his wife got not only a brain tumor, but she had an operation which left her blind. And in her last days, she was bedridden, could hardly move. She didn't take any painkiller. The doctor said, usually we give double or triple dose of morphine to such patients because the pain is so excruciating. And even though we give them so much morphine, they still get pain. She refused to take anything, and she was peaceful. But one morning, he had just finished doing the deity worship. He had just finished dressing his Govardhan Shila, the crown and a little dress. So he came in to tell his wife that, oh, the deities look so beautiful. Govardhan looks so beautiful this morning. And she said, I know, very beautiful. So he said, oh, you know? So what color dress is he wearing? It's green, very beautiful green. And she was right. He had dressed the deities with very beautiful green dress. And many other stories like that. So devotees who practice Krishna consciousness, who control their senses, who eat the right foods, who discuss katayantascha mami nityam, who discuss how they can become better devotees, who keep themselves in the fire of devotional service, somehow or other, they grow. And they go into the ocean of the nectar of devotion. So they know Krishna as the Supreme, and they act on it. And they're the ones who will spread Krishna consciousness to every town and village, and Krishna will embrace them to his bosom and bring them back to his abode. And they're very dear to him. So we should aspire to follow in their footsteps and with strength, with courage, go on. It's hard, I know it's hard, but we can do it. We all of you here, you're all very sincere devotees. I know that. I know it more than you can understand. And you can all be successful in your lives. Just keep going. So are there any questions? Yes?
I have one question regarding preparation that we offer to the Lord. I've heard a few devotees speaking about how devotees in the West like to eat pizza and spaghetti and things
really?
Like that.
So shocked to hear this.
Their point was that in Gokul, Vrindavan, Krishna never eat something like that, so we should not offer it to him. What is your comment on that?
Srila Prabhupada ate our foods. Whatever is good enough for him is good enough for me. He ate cake. I'm not sure if he ate pizza, but in India they have uttapam, which is just like pizza. It's the Indian version, not Indian Pizza Hut or something. You know, they put chilies on their pizzas or what, you know, call it pizza. But this is actually a South Indian dish called uttapam, which is kind of a crust with tomatoes and cheese on it. And Prabhupada had us sing songs in our own language, and he liked it or encouraged us to do it. You know, there's nothing in the Vedas that talks about, you know, Mangalananda's songs. But Prabhupada attended the road show and he encouraged. These things are really, you'll find, although many, there are different standards, but one of the persons who has, relatively speaking, most experience overall and a mature approach is Krishna Kshetra, Maharaj. And Krishna Kshetra Prabhu, Maharaj, he tries to see the result. In other words, there is Niyam Agraha and Niyam Agraha. Following the rules and regulations blindly and not following the rules and regulations. So both are wrong. The rules and regulations are meant to serve the purpose of making you love Krishna. And, you know, if you can only develop love of Krishna by eating pizza, Krishna knows. Now, that doesn't mean we have a license to do anything and everything. Of course, we should try our best to offer things to, but a lot of the time, devotees don't know how to cook. Minor detail. And probably Krishna enjoys your pizza more than he does your sabji and dal and chapatis. Because I know what the standard is, and I have not really had any up-to-standard prasadam in the West, except for by devotees who were trained in India. Any other questions?
Well, about prasadam, it's very pious, it's transcendental.
And ah, Mahaprasadam what?
No, I said prasadam, right?
Yeah.
It's very pious, very it's transcendental.
Mm-hmm.
And it reads leftovers from sainted persons. He said that this prasadam has to be more pious. For example, leftovers from gurus or...
Did everybody understand or hear his question? Anybody? Did you all hear it? Yeah? Okay. You didn't. You did? Okay. Prahlad Maharaj consumed poison in the prasadam. It didn't harm him at all. But one is not advised to consume poison unless he's on the level of Prahlad Maharaj. You may be Prasad Maharaj, but... we have to be careful. Now, I've seen devotees. We have one devotee in Bombay. His name is Hanuman Das. When he joined the movement, young boy from a Maharashtrian village, very sincere. And he used to do his japa in the temple room, sometimes standing in front of the diorama. How many of you have seen by picture or whatever the Bombay temple? Okay, in the temple room, all along the, it's a huge temple. But along the walls there are these sculptures in glass cases of different Krishna Lila, Prabhupada Lila, and different incarnations. There's one of Dattatreya. Dattatreya was an incarnation of Krishna. And beside Dattatreya, there's two or three dogs. That's a separate story. But Hanuman used to stand near there, chanting his japa, and he would stand on one leg as long as he could. And at prasadam time, he would go to the garbage can and would eat prasadam from the guy. He would actually eat a meal from him. He didn't get sick, and he's actually a very sweet devotee. He's not exactly Paramahansa Thakur or something, but he's a nice devotee. He's actually a very sweet boy. But he was able to do that because of his desire, his vision. I remember the days when we were so fired up that we would, you know, if we spilled some prasadam or something on the floor, we would get down on our knees and lick it all up. It's offense to prasadam. So, you know, you would sometimes see in the prasadam hall some sabji all over the floor and some devotee, you know, eating it right off the floor where other devotees had walked or whatever. I don't think anybody got sick. Maybe. A lot of it has to do with your consciousness, but it is definitely not a rule, because you can't legislate consciousness. What to do with contaminated prasadam? Well, some of our biggest acharyas, like Jayananda Maharaj, Jayananda Thakur, he would, after the Sunday feast, gather up all the prasadam, leftover and semi, half-consumed, half-eaten, and he would put it in buckets and he would take it to the winos, the drunk area of town. In San Francisco, that meant a lot of people. But he would distribute food, and those people would love it, and they would know the difference. You know, they'd be so stoned that... And they love the prasadam. If it's palatable, I mean, if it's not contaminated or something, you could probably take that prasadam to, I don't know, some kind of orphanage, or you could have a I don't know what. Prasadam can always be distributed to some person. And if you can't find a human, then it definitely shouldn't just be thrown away, but it can be thrown away in an anthill or something, you know. Find out where the local anthill is and put the prasadam there. Let some jiva get it. I mean, if a dog kept by Lord Chaitanya gave Shivananda Sen's dog a little prasadam and he went back to Godhead. So we can try for that. In general, we should try and try and try until there's absolutely nothing that can be done, and then we should feel sorry and live with it. But yayatha mam prapadyante, it's the same thing. Whatever importance you give, the scriptures give different rituals and different injunctions and different instructions. If you treat it casually, then the result you will get will be casual. If you treat Mahaprasad, that Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmani Vaishnave Svalpa Punyavatam Rajan Visvaso Naiva Jayate, it's not ordinary. Although a non-devotee would say, what's the big deal? You just went into the kitchen and put some water and wheat and together and fried it. It's just food. He doesn't know that it's prasadam. It's offered to Krishna. It's transcendental. It's non-different than the Lord himself. But if you don't have that consciousness, or if you allow yourself to become lazy or casual or cynical or whatever, there's a dynamic working here, a psychological mental dynamic. You're going to see Krishna because of your desire to see him. You will see Krishna when you have a strong desire to see him. And if your desire is weak, you can chant for millions of years. You can eat prasadam until, you know, you're 600 pounds. There's this guy in New York, you know. He was 650 pounds when he died. He was confined to his bed in a room in a house, and the fire department had to come to cut the door so they could get him out. He was so big. He ate a lot. They described his diet. For breakfast, he had, like, you know, 15 hamburgers and, you know, 20 eggs and, you know, half or a whole case of beer. And real glutton. You can eat and eat and eat Krishna prasadam, but if you think it's just food, it's going to work very slowly. It will work, but you're going to... What will work? Someday you'll come to the point where you see, oh, this is Krishna. It's not going to work in such a way, oh, this is just food, it's just food. Oh, back to Godhead. You'll come to a stage where you'll see that this is non-different than the Lord. I'm performing bhakti yoga by eating. So if you have to come to that stage at some point anyway, might as well surrender to it now, today. Too sweet. Right? Maintenant. Now. Immediatement. Did I miss anything? Did that answer your question? I might. It was a long question. It was a very good chance with my Kali Yuga memory. I missed something. Did I miss anything?
Well, what do you think about this? Some people say that karma is involved.
That?
Karma.
Oh, karma is transferred when you do what? Oh, you get the... No. But that way, prasadam cannot be contaminated. You may get sick from somebody's saliva, or, you know, supposing somebody's got AIDS or something, you know. That there's a danger there. And in fact, at one point, there was a big discussion in the GBC that we should have all devotees tested for AIDS, because if they end up working in the kitchen and they cut themselves, the whole temple is, you know, down with AIDS. And it's probably a good idea to screen people at least by inquiry, not even a... There was some constitutional problems, at least in America. You're infringing on my rights by asking for my medical records. I'm going to sue you and, you know, take you to court for $10 million. So the discussion didn't go anywhere. But in Europe, it's probably, you know, not such a heavy issue. And we might do well to screen people, just to protect ourselves, because it is a fact we're not on the level of Prahlad Maharaj. But as far as karma goes, there are even things that Prabhupada said about buying food from non-devotees. and it doesn't have karma. If you pay for it, then there's no karma. And Prabhupada would do that. Of course, he could eat the whole universe and not incur sin, but he was training us, and we would stop at a train station. I personally bought samosas from a shop on the way to Mayapur for Srila Prabhupada. And he would buy on the train station also from the guys there who have their little cart. And Singara, Singara. They're called Singara, not samosa. Well, it's on UPI, I guess, samosa. Again, you know, you have to use your intelligence. And you have to judge how strong you are. Ultimately, the safest position is to only eat Mahaprasadam. The safest position is to cook for yourself. A brahmana, that brahmana who went to the house of Lord Chaitanya, and you read about it all the time, but that brahmana would only cook for himself. He would go to householders, and this was common. They would go to the householders, and the householders would ask, they wouldn't eat the householders' food, but the householders would ask them to cook and give some of the prasad to the householders. In that way, the householders were blessed. So the safest thing is to eat only food that you cook and offer to the Lord. But that may not be practical in the Sankirtan movement. Any other questions? Yes?
Mahaprasad means you offer to installed deities there, and you offer to like in the center they have Gaurmita and installed. They also, that prasad also called Mahaprasad.
Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. If you're saying food offered to Gaurnitai that is not installed, is that Mahaprasadam? Is that your question? Technically, no. But probably, yes. Mahaprasadam means some temples only have a picture of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. And the altar is respected. When we come in the temple room, or when we used to, I don't know of any temples now that don't have at least Gaurnitai. There are some preaching centers that will only have a picture of Lord Chaitanya, or some have Radha Krishna photos. And we offer our obeisances, and we offer all respect, and we try to offer them nice prasadam. The schedule may not be rigid because a preaching center has few people and many things to do, so it can't take up the worship of Radha and Krishna, but we're offering the respect. And the installed deity is called Archa Vigraha Sagun. It is Krishna, but with material qualities. So what is that Sagun? How does that reflect, or how does that, how do the two things, it's stone that a Murtiwala put his feet all over and chiseled on the one side, and then all of a sudden, one fine day, somebody goes, swaha, puts his hand there, now it's Krishna incarnate. How does that work? How did that happen? Well, again, a lot of it is spiritual psychology, because we have faith in the spiritual master as Krishna's representative, or the Mahatma. If Banu Maharaj installed some deities. This is another ignorance that needs to be clarified. Banu Maharaj doesn't have any disciples, but he is one of the most pure-hearted, saintly persons that I know, and very learned, very nice devotee, very funny. That I like about him the most. Now, if he installs the deity just because he's not someone's disciple, doesn't mean that Krishna won't agree to come. So let's refer to sadhus, regardless of whether they have disciples or not. So if a sadhu calls Krishna to come, and we have faith, then all of a sudden, because of our faith, Krishna is there, and the deity is installed, and there's, well, it's Mahaprasadam. All of a sudden, because of our faith, we have faith that he's calling Krishna. Now, we wouldn't ask a nonsense rascal to get up there and do the same ritual. It's not Mahaprasadam. And even there are instances when the pujaris act in such a way that the acharyas say that Krishna has left the temple. Although the deity was installed, but the Brahmins are eating fish, or they're not following principles, or they're not doing proper worship. They're treating the deity as simply, there's a verse, a Bengali verse about a pujari who has a shila that he's worshiping for the public, and people come and give donations and whatever. But he actually just uses the shila to crack nuts at noontime or whatever, when the doors are closed. He takes the shila and just it happens, I guess, because the Bengali saying is there. So at that time the deity is not there in the temple or as the murti. So what is Mahaprasadam? Mahaprasadam is a ritual which helps a pure-hearted devotee to offer his love to Krishna. So, technically no, but practically yes. If it's offered to the deity, or if it's offered to Srila Prabhupada, for us, of course, Prabhupada would always encourage and ask us, especially when he was staying in one place, that we should offer all the food that we offered to him to the deities, or to at least to a little altar of Krishna. He was teaching us. But I and we had full faith that if we offered it to no one else in the universe but Srila Prabhupada, that it was going to Krishna. The Brahmanas.